at the moon. Don't know who or what I am. In your arms a while, face a bit before it knows to smile.
We're here, but there's no trace. Everywhere I turn, you kiss my face.
Namaste and blessings. You are me, and I am another you. May your inner and outer richness and joy increase. This Swami welcomes you with great love and great respect from the heart of all to Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri here on type1radio.com. Thank you, Sonic, over there in Brighton, England, pushing the buttons, playing the music, making sure this Swami doesn't trip over things. Kindly allow this Swami to bring us a bit up to date in the current effort of the Meditative Living Show. We've been exploring a book called The Authoritative Guru Gita of H.H. Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj of Los Angeles, California, who is this Swami's guru and the one who made this Swami a Swami. He, in the year 2007, became the very first white-skinned, American-born human being invited into the rank of the 80 Mahamandaleshwars for this particular planet, whose dharma, whose duty it is to defend and disseminate Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma translates into English as the eternal natural way. It is very, very frequently mislabeled as Hinduism, but can live with that. So by whatever name you may understand these practices, these teachings, this ancient way of assisting a limited individuated unit of consciousness to once again recognize and access its unity with the creator of all, by whatever set of syllables you wish to assign to that creator, or if you prefer no set of syllables at all, that's fine. In our system, okay, which is called Mahadeva Mahayoga, which that in English would mean Mahayoga is the great union. Mahadeva, the great God. So this is the individual first gaining glimpses of the inner situations, levels, and things. And eventually, after making all kinds of mistakes, all kinds of misunderstandings, we eventually come to right understanding of things that very honestly cannot be described in any language. It's just too big for little old words and syllables. But there exists an ancient text referred to as Sri Guru Gita. This text is of a conversation between the deity Shiva and his wife Parvati. And what was going on before this starts is Parvati walks over and Shiva is sitting teaching the Shapta Rishis. These were the seven, his very first students in this world. And to them, he was giving enormous amounts of information and facts and techniques and yada, yada, all this stuff. And Parvati was like, because see, Parvati had already attained God consciousness, realization, recognition of the original condition of truth with a capital T. And she didn't require any of that stuff that he was talking about. So she's like, how does a limited human being, which she had been, become like you? What is the greatness of a guru? So Shiva explains. And that is the subject of the Guru Gita, or the Song of the Guru. Today, we pick up with verse 121. Shiva says to Parvati, that Guru is the sole support of the entire universe, ever gracing the entirety of creation with his kindness by bestowing the knowledge of the self, the big S, self. That guru is ever bestowing the vantage point of existence, consciousness, bliss, also known as Sat Chitananda. May his divine attention rest on me always. Number 122. There is nothing greater than the guru. 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 This is the command of Shiva. 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 Number 123, Shiva says to Parvati, "This indeed is Shiva. Indeed, this too is Shiva. Indeed, this too is Shiva. Indeed, this too is Shiva. This is the command of Vishnu. This is the command of Vishnu. This is the command of Vishnu. This is the command of Vishnu." Number 124. Shiva says to Parvati, "That which has been stated in the previous verse is known, and it should be understood thus." That is known and should be understood in this way. That is known and should be understood this way. That is known and should be understood in this way. This is the command of Brahma. 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 The commentary. The preceding three shlokas or verses contain a total of six statements, each repeated four times for emphasis. Let us now explore the implications of these statements. When consciousness creates the universe, we call it Brahma. Lord Brahma, in creating the universe, encoded the means of overcoming the deluded notion of separation, the assumption of which is intrinsic to the creation of the universe and all that exists within it. Into the very same universe. In a sense, the problem is the solution. Put another way, we cannot see outside the universe. So the way out must be found within the universe also. This way out is a person who sees through the illusion, a living guru. Lord Brahma creates the illusory universe, but he also offers within that very same illusory universe the means with which to transcend it. When consciousness is engaged in maintaining the created order of things, it is called Vishnu. In this light, one could be forgiven for regarding Lord Vishnu as a perpetuator of delusion. But from the enlightened perspective, each and every individual element of the universe is Shiva only. It is there, it is real, but it is just consciousness. So, while Vishnu does sustain the universe of apparent multiplicity, Even his doing so is congruent with the law that the objective reality of everything that exists is rooted in the one supreme subject. There is nothing that is not God. Or, as the guru phrases it, this indeed is Shiva. Indeed, this too is Shiva. This Shiva is your innermost self, with the big S. And the most intimate big S self of all that you may encounter. Wherever you look, there you are. When consciousness is engaged in the destruction of the universe, it is called Shiva. When all else is burnt away, all that remains is the highest principle. Consciousness absolute, variously termed Brahman, Paramashiva, and the Guru Tattva. By the decree of this highest principle itself, it is no different than the personal living Guru. Again, it is this Guru who burns away the ignorance, obscuring the knowledge that this principle is one's very own self, with the big S. In short, it is the guru who transcends the entire created order of things. That same guru is immanent within every individual within creation as its innermost self, with the big S. The living guru is both at the same time. This is always known at a certain level, and here on earth, we should work toward perceiving this ourselves by making use of what the guru has to offer. Verse 125. Shiva says to Parvati, one should acquire knowledge by meditating upon the guru in this way. Then, by following guru's instructions, the feeling I am liberated should be cultivated. The commentary. The big S self is already yours and has always been free. It is only in believing yourself to be something lesser, something subject to bondage, that one appears to be bound to anything whatsoever. It is in following the path laid out by the guru, the living guru, that the erroneous assumption that you are some I or me, which is distinct from an other, becomes dissolved. When there is nothing left to obstruct the truth that was always already the case, it flashes forth as the conviction, I am liberated. Verse 126. Shiva says to Parvati, one's mind should be purified by following the path given by the guru, by identifying with the self or the Atman. One should reject all that is transient the commentary. In adhering to the guru path, one is offered glimpses of their own true nature. In Sanskrit, one's true nature is called swarupa. This is the basis for this Swami's guru's title, Swarupananda, the bliss of the true self, of the true nature. At this point, a part of one's practice becomes the effort aimed at fixing their attention one-pointedly upon the big-ass self. Eventually, attention remains upon that, with a capital T, at all times without wavering. Verse 127. Shiva says to his lovely wife, Parvati, who is already free, you know. Shiva says, what is known and the knowing thereof, both are but manifestations of the mind. One should drop the distinction between the known and the knowledge thereof. There is no second path. The commentary. Then, once you have done this, wherever one's attention goes, there is nothing that is not the big-ass self. There is nothing that is not God. All is but a dense mass of pure consciousness, never subject to division in reality. The knower, the known, and the knowing thereof are just one seamless expression of the same all-pervading oneness. Allow this Swami to step away from the text for a moment. This oneness is you. It hasn't forgotten you. It never ceased being you, but in order to come and play on the stage of the play of consciousness and this exercise in separation and limitation, you, by whatever name may be on your identification documents, had to forget what you truly are. This then gives us the opportunity to learn, to experience, to suffer, to have joy. All of these things are only accomplishable through the individuated unit. Because in the one, let us just simply put the definition on that, prior to any possibility, any potential, any incarnation, any manifestation, any vibration at all, from that one point of view, nothing can be added, nothing can be taken away, and nothing is a problem. So that is the task of the practice of yoga. Remember, yoga comes from the Sanskrit term yuj, which means to yoke, like you would put a yoke on oxen to hold them together in order to pull something. Okay? This yoking is putting together again the individual perspective with the Creator. The very possibility of a creation. You are being put back into union with that, with a capital T. And worshiped, cursed, or whatever you decide to do through any set of syllables that come to mind. It doesn't care. It knows how the story ends. And fully expects you to be joyous sometimes, and pissed off at other times, and hurting sometimes, and floating on clouds, and playing in subtle realms. All of that. That's what the game was created for. To make this possible. Sonic, let's go ahead and run the bottom of the hour break song. And we will return to verse 128, discussing the different scriptures and things after this break here on Meditative Living. Namaste and blessings. Welcome back to Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri. exploring the ever so valuable text, the authoritative Guru Gita of H.H. Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj, which it is this Swami's great pleasure to be a student of this guru. Now, verse 128, Shiva says to Parvati, "Of what use are the many sayings of millions of scriptures without the grace of the Supreme Guru? Peace of mind cannot be attained." The commentary. Scriptures are only words delivered ideally by a guru for the sake of shaping the thoughts and guiding the actions of the seeker. This is only of any real use if it causes the seeker to attune their psychophysical or mind-body instrument to the frequency of the guru via the agency of thought, word, and deed or action. The seeker should become dialed in to the frequency of grace. This only becomes possible with the guidance of the personal guru. Otherwise, we are stumbling in the dark. Verse 129. Shiva says to Parvati, "He is the true guru who, by the sword of his mercy, destroys the 8 knots of attachments on behalf of his disciples, thus bestowing the happiness born of true knowledge." The commentary. The symbolism of knots and the concept of attachments are often intertwined with one another, and additionally with the chakra system of the subtle body within a human being. The chakras are centers where energy is taken in, expelled, and processed. In all comprehensive models, it is acknowledged that the subtle body of a human being has at least hundreds of chakras, both major and minor. Different models posit varying numbers of primary chakras, generally described as being located along the spinal column. The most common models say there are 7, 8, or 9 primary chakras. The individual who is subject to delusion as the result of ignorant thought, the chakras in that one may be conceived as knots impeding the flow of subtle energy between one another. In particular, the kundalini energy originating at the root chakra is unable to flow unobstructed to the crown chakra as a result of the knotted state of the lower chakras. Again, the state of the individual whose kundalini activity is limited to the lower chakras is that of one who is subject to the deluded notion of I as distinct from an other. Attachment and suffering, too, are part and parcel of the individual's state of being subject to this delusion. On the flip side, the individual who is not deluded in this way is privy to the knowledge, the jnana, that results in unwavering peace and happiness. The Guru's mercy is the agent by which these knots of attachments are severed. Kundalini is allowed to flow freely up to the Sahasrara in the crown of the head, and the individual is free to abide in the blissful knowledge of the transpersonal self. Allow this, Swami, to step away from the text for a moment on this point. This, Swami, is currently in what this mind likes to refer to as the push to Paramahamsa. The term Paramahamsa means that one's individual efforts are complete. You've done it. You sit atop all there is to be atop. And you're stable there, incapable of falling. Now, let this Swami also freely admit, have been in the enlightened state and fallen. This happens. If any of the steps leading up to that have not been properly addressed or worked through, you can attain that, but not for long, and you will fall. And then you pick yourself up and you start climbing again. Keep in mind how little effort falling takes. One misstep, boom, down you go. Climbing. Now that requires focus and balance and effort constantly while you're doing that. So, to fall is not like punishment. No. It's not even really a negative, actually. It just means that you missed a step. You didn't finish something up, and you haven't come all the way to perfect understanding yet. You've still got something out of balance. You've still got something not quite worked out yet. You're still having thoughts, words, or actions which are not yet perfectly aligned with divine will. And this isn't an easy thing to do. You don't just add water and stir. You don't just go to some weekend seminar and get a piece of paper. No. This is a very, very long process and takes many, many, many lives to get it right. Verse 130. Shiva says to Parvati, he who vilifies the guru, even after having heard all of this, will attain a terrible hell. For as long as the sun and the moon exist. The commentary. The Guru Gita has amply demonstrated that the guru is the individual's well-wisher. The guru wants nothing for the disciple but their progress and fulfillment. The guru is the benefactor of the entire universe. We have also had occasion to discuss karma, the mechanism of cause and effect, the equilibrating force of the universe. What greater disservice could one do to humanity than to dissuade others from acting in their own best interests? Being granted the boon or the great gift of having been exposed to the Guru Gita, one who acts in this way, as in speaking against or disrespecting guruhood, one is not acting out of ignorance. Now, they are doing so willfully. It is truly a perverted intellect that cannot accept what is printed in these pages. It cannot be spelled out more clearly than this. How can anything other than undesirable karma be gained when one's actions stem from a deluded point of view? Whether one accepts it or not, oxygen must be taken into the lungs if one is going to remain alive in this body. If one intentionally deprives themselves of it, well, there is only one possible outcome, and that is not really a desirable outcome. Going even further, to deprive others of the benefit of oxygen can only compound the severity of one's own error. The guru is a weighty matter, and to interfere with guru's work is a weighty offense. Verse 131. Shiva says to Parvati, one should remember the guru as long as the body is still alive. The guru should be remembered until the entire world cycle is complete. One should never neglect or belittle the guru, not even after one becomes free. The commentary. If one is not enlightened, these are the attitudes to adopt, habits to cultivate, and behaviors to avoid in order for one to receive what the guru has to offer. These are tips to make oneself receptive. This is what it means to come to the guru with an upturned palm rather than a clenched fist. This is what it is to tune the radio dial that is your mind to the frequency that is guru's grace. even if one is already enlightened, to forget or neglect the guru is to no longer be enlightened. To think of the guru principle as anything other than the highest of the high and the cornerstone of all that is good and worthwhile is to fall prey to worldly delusion once again. And to think that one sees correctly, but to belittle any living guru, is to have one's vision eclipsed by ignorance and pride. One whose unwavering perspective is that of Paramashiva only knows the guru in the truest sense. That enlightened individual's attention is always fixed upon that, with a capital T. Since Shiva is everywhere and everything, where can one turn to avoid him? Nobody is ever more or less special than you. There is neither greater nor lesser in the order of the universe. There is neither first nor last. There is only Shiva. Verse 132. Shiva says to Parvati, an intelligent disciple should never, ever use contemptuous words or utter any untruth in the presence of Guru. The commentary. There is no room in the presence of the Guru for contempt. There is no room in the presence of the Guru for untruth. The Guru knows only the self of all. The self only relates to the self in a loving way. Even the most deluded of ignorant individuals behaving in the most depraved of ways are only the self, albeit they are under the spell of delusion, of limitation. Those individuals who are operating from the deluded perspective of I or me as different from another, to be sure, will not be spared the fruits that they have sown with their own misguided thoughts, words, and actions. While the face that the guru puts on in relating to such individuals might not always be nice, or one that makes that person feel comfortable, at the heart of the matter, the guru is always relating to the ignorant jivas, or souls, that he or she comes into contact with from a place of compassion. While what they do is, to one degree or another, essentially misguided, this plight is universal to those who have braved the inevitable horrors of this embodied condition. Still, all are only ever Shiva, or God. This is the outlook of the guru. To the guru, everything is only the self. the big S self, interacting with the big S self. The guru only loves. The guru is only love. This love manifests as compassion for the various levels of embodied beings. This is the highest truth. One is really in the presence of the guru when this is what one perceives for themselves. When this is the case, the individual becomes one with guru, him or herself. Failing that, one should habituate themselves to relating to others out of compassion rather than contempt. One should cultivate the habit of being truthful at all times. Since the guru is Shiva, and since there is nothing that is not Shiva, one should strive to maintain this observance at all times. With every thought, with every word, with every action. This alone will help to purify one's mind and promote the expansion of consciousness. In the presence of the personal guru, the living one, all one's efforts become infinitely more effective. In short, failing to perceive from the perspective of the guru, one's best approximation of this perspective, in conjunction with guru's grace, will bestow this perspective in the end. And that is where we will wrap up Guru Gita number 12. Number 13, we will begin next week with verse 133. Kindly allow this, Swami, to thank you. Whether you are listening live or to the podcast or in any other way, from any realm at all, thank you for allowing this, Swami, to be of service to Shiva through you. To this Swami's eye, you too are God. God is just having a nap within you and waiting to be awakened fully. It can be done. Many of us do it. Some of us come really close. The majority of people on earth don't even really try. Well, that's unfortunate for them, but their choice to behave exactly as they choose. So, Sonic, thank you once again for expertly pushing the buttons and playing the music and keeping the Swami out of trouble. Namaste and blessings. We'll see you next week here on Meditative Living.